Chapter 14. Lump and Freckle.
What is this? A small lump in my breast?
Maybe it's my imagination. Probably. Ignore it and check it some other week. Live life. Don't fret. Checking again, months later. It's still there. I fretted. The doctor's exam and mammogram validated my suspicions that there was a lump. It needed to be removed right now, in my opinion. The sands in the hourglass trickled slowly until the day of surgery arrived. The medical profession does not offer a zipline ride, but a snail pace slide to the surgery day. Meanwhile, the devil delighted in dire prophecies with his cruel, twisty, disturbing whispers, especially when the sun went down and the whirl of the day's work came to a hush.
Cancer? You've probably got it. And?
It's very possible you don't have it. Faith would counter the hissing, whispering harassment.
If I have it, why? What is the root?
Father, show me the root. Let's deal with the beginning seed. Our youngest is 8. Our children need a mother.
Help me understand why, so I can repent and be clean. I pleaded.
Pastor Henry, a visiting speaker who'd taken pre-med studies, had been teaching on the spiritual root causes of many diseases. Thumbing through pages in his book, I found a few flakes of gold. One was that brooding produces toxins that eat at you and can form cancers and cysts. Another was that issues with your mother may cause such. This lump's beginning may have started with brooding issues. Grandpa, Joyanne, Ethan, Doreen, and I had spent the previous year in Pennsylvania with my parents, with the intent of helping Mother with Daddy, who had Alzheimer's. I felt like we ended up being a burden, and not the help we'd hoped to be. They'd been so long by themselves that they didn't adjust to the children or to us. Maybe because we had previously told them that we hoped to care for them, and then had moved away. Mother's trust was fractured. I was busy with homeschooling, but I tried to help. Surely, I thought, just having family in the home would be a pleasant security against loneliness. Mother was quite independent. She didn't share her thoughts and struggles with us, and Daddy couldn't. I think that generation didn't embrace children as equals when the children were older. Parents were parents, and their adult children were still their children. It just wasn't done. It's not that we were enemies, either. There was a reserve that made a wall. I brooded about it a lot. I knew we were loved, and we loved them. But things didn't unfold like we had hoped. I knew Barbara was so glad we were there. It saved her many 3-hour trips from her Virginia home that she would have made if we hadn't been there that year. At the end of the year, we left, after thoroughly spring-cleaning the whole house and doing all the outside work we could possibly do. I knew Mother's future road with Daddy would get rougher. I knew she wouldn't be able to handle him eventually. Then what? We knew she would not put him in a care home till she was desperate. I brooded. When you feel like your presence doesn't bring relief and a sparkle to someone, what do you do? Failure to break through dogged my thoughts. My heart was heavy. Did that cause this lump? I didn't know for sure. All I could do was pray for my disappointed heart to be healed and ask forgiveness for any clumsiness on our part. Then I began thanking him for healing. Before I experienced it. the faith lessons from the backache after delivering Mark would be reviewed again. Frankly, fretting and giving thanks took turns like the ocean's tides, anxiety rolling in, draining back out, sometimes high tides, sometimes low tides. I worked at keeping the sands of my unstable emotions clean from the debris of sin and brooding. When you've done all you know to do, the word says stand. The hourglass sands trickling and timing the waiting for the operation finally ran out. It was removed, and I was bandaged with the stickiest wrap ever over half my chest from front to back. Flipping the hourglass again, we waited for results. It was a cyst. Joy and relief flooded over us. The last test was finished when Grandpa finally pulled the Gorilla Grip wrap off. After trying to gently remove it bit by bit, he finally did it quickly, and I howled. I had mixed reactions from being upset with him to being glad he did it quickly, and it was over. After days of exercises, I could raise my arm again. Hosea wrote in chapter 3, verse 14, "I will give her the valley of trouble as a door of hope. She shall sing there." I did. True, each test deepens the well of experience of faith in his shepherding. In 3 years, I'd be lowering my bucket in that well to get faith water again. Little freckles sprinkled on my nose and cheeks as a child were cute. I didn't want to wear my sunbonnet to avoid freckles. The bonnet frequently hung down my back, like Laura's in the Little House on the Prairie books and movies. Freckles were okay with me. I helped plant potatoes in the garden, hunted for wild strawberries, helped pick stones out of the fields, and sometimes drove the tractor for Daddy when haying. I gardened and mowed lots of grass for many years, with no bonnet and no long sleeves. In 1994, a teeny dark freckle appeared on my wrist. I wasn't alarmed. It seemed to be a tiny bit itchy and grew a trifle. It was probably just my imagination thinking that it was growing. In the next 2 years, it grew slightly and itched at odd times, but not often. Dr. Watt thought it would be better to remove it and test it, although it didn't look weird, just dark. Weeks later, the nurse called and said the doctor needed to see me. She was not free to give any news of the test on the phone. Deep down, I knew it was melanoma. Guess who came knocking at the door of my mind? Yes, Joy Robber came to squeeze my face down to a teeny-weeny speck. A magazine's backpack burden of pictures and data opposing my faith had appeared at my house and added to his artillery. Its research included nasty paragraphs that talked of foreboding seeds that travel from the melanoma to distant places in the body. It could possibly lie dormant for years if it was deep enough in the surface of the skin. It said that someone had died just 3 months after diagnosis. Suddenly my arm and armpit had new itchy sensations, which were tricks to fuel the panic fire. They were lies of imaginations that wanted me to feel anxious. The smith that blows the coals, Isaiah chapter 54, verse 16, troubled me, especially at night. Remembering the backache battle after Mark's delivery, again, I thank God for healing before I felt it. I declared again the verse, "Concerning the work of my hands, command you me," that I'd warred with before Doreen was born. I commanded life. I reviewed Psalm 23, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." A shadow is not the real thing. You are with me. At night, I silently sang many praises of God's goodness in my head, so Grandpa would not be woken. I thanked him for many, many blessings I'd enjoyed. Finally, a peace prospered. Whether I had cancer and died or not, many nights I adored and worshipped him, till I fell asleep. As I'd been sent to Edmonton for this operation, the smith that blows on the coals of fear blew real hard to light up the panic fire again the night of our arrival. Peace wasn't prospering in me. Grandpa and Joyanne turned on the TV, as there was little to do, and began watching a historical movie of a war in France. It was a well-known movie, but with way too much intense, scary drama, when I was dying. The enemy roared in my thoughts. He taunted, testing my tenacity. "You're dying, and they are watching this?" He wanted to Velcro fear, aloneness, and doubt deep in my soul. His mission was to dim, dull, and diminish my faith. I didn't scold them for being insensitive, but nerves made my feet and hands icy cold. The room was cold, and I didn't want to hear the storyline with dramatic music heightening the suspense. I had enough suspense in my life right then. I didn't need that. I jumped under the covers, threw them over my head to drown out everything possible, curled up in a ball, and clung to words and songs inscribed in my soul in former tests. The cold, dark night seemed eternal. The ocean tides again flowed between unbelief and faith. But finally, a quilt of peace warmed me. The doctor and med students circled my bed for the operation. It was classroom time for them. I was in good hands, both my father's and the doctor's. The analysis of the area removed showed it was right at the edge of the safe/danger zone. For the next couple years, I had to do checkups in Edmonton every 3 months, which were later tapered out to 6 months. A test question put before me was, do I love God for his presence or his provision? His presence was my choice this time. If he didn't provide healing, he was still a good father. I thought of my daddy. He didn't tease, abuse, or do anything out of meanness. Neither does God. Matthew chapter 7, verse 11. If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him? His gift was not the absence of a test, but the gift of seeing me through the test. The entrance gates of heaven are made of pearls. God uses intruders of irritating issues, disease, disaster, debts, deficiency, that give us the choice of making pleasing pearls or pouts. Oysters have the technique of gem making by covering the sand grains or parasites of irritation with layers of pretty mother of pearl. God watches to see if we'll work out our salvation with layers of praise, or if we'll be mad and bitter about the test. Pearls win over pouts.